Namaste and welcome back to part two of this week one update for May 2021 graduate program. And so I have, let me see, 1, 2, 3 homeworks left. And I'll get started with those. So the first one says, excuse me. Hi, Helen. Unfortunately, I missed a live session today for May. I looked for the recording, but it was not up yet, so I listened to April's week 4 homework recording, which I had missed. I am currently in a very low mood, and I apologize for this. When I am deep within the dark, murky water of the ego mind, it feels like I am drowning and wrong for being there, lost in the thoughts again. It was painful to listen to the recording in this state, especially a part on imagining and manifesting. It brought up the incredible amounts of frustration I had been feeling lately with not being able to manifest the life I desire. One of my lifelong frustrations has been with loneliness. Another huge one is boredom. I'm in a transitional phase in my life now as a stay-at-home mom and find myself bored and alone a lot. I've always loved adventure and look for the excitement in life, but what I have attracted is the complete opposite. The mate I chose is not the adventurous, spontaneous type, and unfortunately, my children are very much like him in the sense as well. I have always felt like I've missed out on the party of life. I end up so disappointed and frustrated when I see I still have not been able to manifest what I truly desire in life. The list is long, but ultimately it is to feel loved, wanted, safe, and free. I do sit in imagination about what I desire and have many moments of clarity and peace that seem to now last longer, thankfully. But I am knocked down to complete ego mind identification every month for a week due to hormones, and there is so much suffering with it. In this state, it is very difficult to detach from the same old painful stories of the mind, like the one playing out now about never truly getting what I want out of life. I then get so angry and jealous when I hear others manifesting so easily when I can't. It fuels a belief in there being something wrong with me. Will I ever overcome this? Will I ever have the experiences in life I've always dreamed of? My past and my experience say no. Is there a way I can get past this? Is there something I can do differently? Or is it just not possible or sustainable due to my monthly dive into negativity and pain? Much love to you always. Well, let me start by saying I love you. And I know the sting of loneliness. It's been with me my entire life. And the sting of boredom. I've sat in this very house many times feeling that I am missing out on life. And I totally understand that feeling that somewhere there's an alternate version of my life and somehow I'm missing out on it. And that became so extraordinarily painful that I really began to question why I couldn't get what I want and the life that I want and what is in the way of that, what is stopping the highest manifestation that's possible in this moment, what I would want. Excuse me, and how to go about that. And it all comes back to causality for me. And when I would like you to put your attention, again, it doesn't matter whether we're doing it in May's lesson or, you know, anything in particular that you need to focus on is fine. If I believe that there is something that can stop me from living the life I want to live, from having the seeing I want to see, from living as the awakened being I want to be, to live as rather. Whatever it is I want, whether it's fun, adventure, passion, purpose, freedom, enlightenment, I want to feel wanted, I want to feel free, I want to feel safe, I want to feel unlimited. Whatever it is that we want, what can get in the way of that? And I had a conversation with someone today about ego. And I have many conversations about ego, obviously, given what I do, but it was the same basic idea that there is something called ego, this idea that there is an actual thing called an ego that I am duty bound to be at the effect of. Ego is the cause, and the effect is that I feel miserable when I identify with it. And that there's nothing I can do to stop that when it happens. So here's a cause and effect I would like you to look at. Is there such a thing as ego that you can identify with? Because if you think there is, on a subtle level at least, it will be experienced that way. That every now and again, I just identify with thoughts and there's nothing I can do about it. And I would really also like you to look at, is there really such a thing as hormones that can cause me, causes the hormones, and the effect is how you're feeling right now or as you wrote this, when you wrote this, that is the effect. And that there's nothing I can do. I'm disempowered for however many days it is each month. And I've been through the same. I'm not judging at all. I can be as peaceful as I like, and then at that time, you know, it in every particular month, whenever it happens, I have to go on this emotional roller coaster. And really, if you see that they are the same, really, if you can see they are the same root idea underneath, that there's something that can affect me and diminish my peace, diminish my joy. And I had to examine these ideas too. It seems like hormones are causing you to feel pulled down into identifying with mind. It seems that way. But that experience is reflecting what you believe is possible for you, what can happen to you, that something can affect you and bring you into identification with the mind, with the ego, with the darkness and despair and all of that, the negativity. Are you duty bound to just go through this for the rest of existence? No, not at all. When you come to see clearly that there is nothing that can touch you, hurt you, or affect you, and there is nothing then can stop you from getting what you want, that your agreement with this idea is diminishing your joy and your peace and the outer manifestation of that as all the things you would want to experience in life. So I would really urge you to become obsessed with this question. What can affect me? What can cause me to feel different than I want to feel? What can stop me getting what I want to get out of life? If there is something other than you that can affect you, if there is something other than you, and the two examples you cited here are hormones, one thing in the body, and the other thing is the egoic sense of self, negativity, or maybe three things, ego, negativity, and hormones. Those are things. And for those things to affect you, you would have to be a thing too. So it's all based on this idea that we're not seeing clearly enough what we really are. Are you a thing that can be affected by another thing? What can touch you? Nothing at all can bring you down from any state. But you can experience being brought down from the peace, love, and joy if you believe that that's possible for you. So I would really suggest looking at this idea that there's something outside of you that can hurt you or affect you or change your experience. You might have seen in a tangible way that no being out there can make me feel bad. It's my own thoughts that can do that. But I want you to take that one step further. Can even your own thoughts make you feel bad? Can even ego pull you down? Does it have any effect upon you at all? Is the sky affected by the clouds? Are there is the ocean affected by the waves? You are the ocean. You are the sky. The ego is just another cloud rippling through you. Are you going to... I would really suggest actually just taking this question inside. What can bring me down? You are... You said it yourself actually here. Where is it? Only past and... Where have you said it? I can't currently find it. But I think you said something like only your past and previous experiences. That's the only evidence you've got, isn't it? That's the only evidence that something can bring you down, or what you're experiencing right now, something can bring you down. And your current experience and all of your previous experiences have been reflections of this idea that something can impact me, bring me down. So I want you to really look at this, really question. There's a causality loop at play here. That most of the time I'm improving more and more, I'm breaking through and I'm experiencing peace and a better life. And then a certain time of the month, or when ego does its thing, I've got no choice. I'm powerless over this thing. Firstly, there has to be two things there, and you have to be a thing for that to be true. Are you a thing? Are you an object? And are you ever powerless? If you are the self, you are the infinite power, and you have to stand in this conviction, at least mentally, and then your experience will change. There's no way to break free of ego or hormones, because they're not actually the thing that's causing the issue. It's just the belief that something can affect you. So have a listen to this a couple of times maybe and really look at this idea that there's something overpowering you, there's something affecting you, there's something hurting you, and that you have no choice or no power in those moments. All signs and symptoms of being a separate being. That there is something outside of you that can hurt you. Even the ego is seen this way, isn't it? That's all. So have a listen to this a few times and get back to me with some feedback on what you come up with this when you really start to look at it. I had to unravel and untangle all this as well. It's so very popular for women to believe that my hormones, I'm a slave to my hormones once a month, isn't it? Just as there are similar things for men, you know, men find it hard to cry. There's another stereotype about different genders, all of that. None of it is, there is nothing that can affect you in that way. You are not a human body. And the hormones are a reflection of this idea that something can hurt you, not the cause of it. The hormones are being stimulated in response. You have to keep proving to yourself that something can hurt you and pull you down, whilst and diminish your joy and your fun and your freedom and your perfect life. You have to keep experiencing that somehow whilst this belief is in play. And how we do that to ourselves is individual and unique, isn't it? Not on purpose doing it to ourselves, but unknowingly until we break through. There is no such thing as hormones. I know you could Google it. I know you could find a lot of evidence about it. But hormones too are the self. They are you. They are not outside of your control. When we believe in separation and cause and effect, the hormones mainly run on from adrenaline based and things like that, and produce a negative effect in the body, lower the body's state, the energy field, you know, that the body's appearing in. When they come from truth, they tend to have a positive, beneficial impact upon brain chemistry and therefore what the body experiences and feels. And that's the only thing that needs to kind of slide into place here. So have a have a go with this and let me know. And I'm right here with you. I've been right where you are, literally. Not right where you're sitting, but spiritually, I've been right where you are. Once a month, going through this endless thing of despair. And I'm happy to say that that no longer occurs. There's nothing that can affect me. And I've seen clearly that nothing ever has. That I made all of that up in my imagination and experienced it extraordinarily real way as a self, because I am infinite power. Not I have infinite power, I am infinite power. Therefore, any delusionary idea that I called onto, I'm going to experience as extraordinarily real. When the infinite dreams, his dreams seem infinitely real, or imagines, whichever. Deludes itself. And this is just one root tendency to investigate. Lovely. Look forward to hearing from you on how you get on with that. Okay, next one. Good morning, Helen. This is my first month in the graduate program and now the first time doing the homework here. I do feel unworthiness coming up as I feel maybe I don't belong in this level as I see and hear advanced discussions. But nonetheless, I am speaking up to share the following. I still struggle with the 4 a.m. satsangs when I wake up in a state of terror, like falling off a cliff. Heart beating strong and such a strong feeling of dread and doom. I have learned with you to work with finding the stillness, silence, spaciousness, openness, noumenon. And then the fear subsides and peace starts to return. I'm grateful for your teachings and way out of that feeling of terror. I am frustrated that I have to continue to experience this feeling of dread. Also, my work life, where I used to get some sense of joy on the thrill of a sale and also a lot of suffering, I am now noticing that I'm questioning why I'm doing this job. I notice I like meeting new people daily, but the thrill of selling products has gone. I go about my day and do experience a nice day, but definitely feel that I'm wandering around, not sure where I am going. It does feel meaningless, but along the way, I meet these beings and talk to them, and I do feel that this is precious. I find myself sharing about you and this work, as this is what I am now so passionate about. When I wake up early, a lot of the things I am overwhelmed with is issues I perceive with possible negative outcomes at work. I am tired of waking up with this panic and angst and so grateful to be working with you. Do you have any suggestions on how these morning feelings will go away? I feel lost with no direction too, and I suppose I feel goalless and this is scaring me too, but I can't seem to be interested in a sales goal anymore. I'm only interested in resting in the noumenon as much as I can. Thank you, Helen. Let me start by saying well done for sending this in. And you are absolutely worthy in this family. There's no advanced or beginners or advanced in a way. There's only those body-mind vehicles that have been hanging around the graduate program for a while that may sound advanced to other people listening, you know, too. And they all started from the exact same place where you are. They probably felt unworthy too. So I'm really glad that you have pushed through that and sent this in. Really glad. You know, I want to hear from anyone that needs help or wants to celebrate with me. That's my passion, you know. So, and that feeling of dread, oh, I remember that. You know, I really remember that. It was pretty constant throughout the entire waking state for me, that state of dread. And it would be very exaggerated when I used to wake up in the middle of the night. I remember that very clearly. What you've written here is very reminiscent for me of how I used to be. And as far as, let me take that bit first. As far as how to deal with that more directly, first, we begin to allow the feelings and not to resist them and all of that. And then, of course, the urge is going to rise to deal with that on a more direct level. So it's coming from, dread is fear, isn't it? And fear is I'm not safe or I'm in danger. And I know that you've been working on that. I think you said it even in here. But it may help to just look at it a bit closer. For me, when I looked at that dread, it was a sense that something is going to happen to me, something unexpected, unseen, unplanned for. And I experienced this many times as well. I created this experience for myself where something, life just came along and picked up my life as I knew it and just kind of shook it around and tipped it upside down and said, there you go. And this is kind of the dread, isn't it? The dread is saying, it's kind of gut level, gut-wrenching fear. At any moment now, something outside of my control is going to happen to me, and there's nothing I can do about it. It's outside of my control. I'm just a hapless, helpless bystander. I'm waiting for life to smack me around the head again in some sort of way. Can you get a sense of it, that feeling? And get in touch with the dread more directly and ask it what it's scared of. And it's usually something happening to you from something outside of you, from your control. And I've spoke about it again with the hormones. That's the way that we experience it. I'm not saying you're experiencing hormones, but something outside of my control that just happens to me and there's nothing I can do about it. And that is the essence of separation. You know, if I'm enjoying my work, for example, I'm going to be constantly fearing in the background that someone will just come and take my job away. If I'm enjoying my life, at some point life's just going to be taken away from me as a separate being. If I finally find the right person, meet them, fall in love, live happily ever after, eventually even that's going to be taken away. And I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but I'm just pointing to this viewpoint in separation where we're just waiting for the other shoe to drop, aren't we? We're waiting for that thing. And I remember there was a strange time in my life where loads of beings around me got shingles. Not all together, it was one after the other. I don't know whether you call it something different there in the States or whatever, but shingles. And when I looked that up, it was fear on Louise Hay's list of things of the body, waiting for the other shoe to drop. It says, oh my God, I've been doing this my entire life. I could not relax. There was this, you know, and that is it Chicken Little? I used to call my ego Chicken Little because it was just constantly waiting for this guy to fall in on it, trying somehow to desperately prepare and yet always caught unawares when life slapped me. But this slapping thing that went on was a reflection of my belief that there was something outside of me that can hurt me, and a lingering viewpoint of a separate being, isn't it, where our thinking hasn't really. So I would, just like I was saying with the previous homework, I would really spend some time questioning, and it might help to listen to the previous homework before this one if you haven't already. Is there anything outside of me that can hurt me? And we've all experienced that there is. We've all got many things we can cite as evidence for this. A virus, a disease, losing a job, not getting a promotion, a house sale falling through, a lover leaving us, argument with our children. We could go on forever citing times when things outside of me or beings outside of me have hurt me that I had no control over. But eventually we have to come to realize that this is the root of separation. Feeling separate to other things means that they are outside of my control and not me as a separate being. It's not like, ha ha, I'm the evil villain here that wants to control the world, you know. What a crazy moment. Just pretend that never happened. It is me as the universal being, me that creates and supports and sustains the entire appearance of all of this effortlessly. You are in control of everything. There is nothing outside of your control as that being, that one being, as the noumenon. And if you really see the core idea here that's coming up to be examined, that it is something good happening because your awakening is deepening, this dread is rising, saying, please contemplate me because the ego can't do it, then I would really look at, is there anything that can hurt me? We at some point, we have to stop referencing our previous experience as evidence, recognizing as you're learning through lesson two, as lesson two deepens, whatever I feel is possible for me, whatever I believe can happen to me, I will experience in some way. And you can see this playing out on a global scale with the pandemic. You know, you can see this playing in someone driving along, their car gets hit by someone else. There's that belief at play. I'm not safe. Something is about to happen to me. An ego thinks it can compensate by being on guard, by being scared, by being alert, by being watchful in that way. And it doesn't work. So grab this question with all that you have. Is there really anything that can hurt me? Wouldn't I have to be a thing to be hurt? And what if I am the no-thingness that's everywhere and everything, appearing as everything? There would really, suddenly that question became so urgent for me, urgent and important and obsessive. I became obsessive with that question until I got rid of this feeling of dread, not pushing it away, but the moment I began to feel it at 4 a.m. or 2 a.m., wherever it was, or constantly during the day sometimes, I'd look back at the root of it. I'm waiting for something to happen, waiting for the other shoe to drop. And as the self, that is impossible. It cannot. There can be no nasty surprises as the self, as you transcend this idea. And this is what it's coming from, isn't it? We've all had experiences as children or adolescents or young adults or whatever to agree that everything is outside of our control, everything. But it's only true as a separate being, and it's asking you to transcend it now, definitely. So the second part about work, I would say also that if the passion is moving, nothing's going wrong here, the passion is moving, isn't what you feel passionate about, meeting new beings, sharing something valuable with them. How can you do that and earn a living then? How can you enrich and meet other beings with your presence and they enrich you and you earn a living from that? And it's really probably just a movement from identifying as what you do for a living. What's naturally occurring is some movement, is a change, some change is occurring in that. You're coming more to identify as what you are, and that your beingness is more important than any particular thing you're doing. And that's where the contribution is. So you can get that same feeling of contributing and serving and helping, having some really important, passionate encounter in the strangest of places and even in the work that you're currently doing. It's okay if you can't get so excited about a sales target now. Or you could say, the higher my sales achievement, the more people's lives I've touched today with my presence, with my emerging presence. You know, find the way to spin it that works for you, because if what you're finding, if you follow the joy and the passion where the passion is going, it will lead to a much more fulfilling life anyway. And maybe it's less about what you're doing or less about what you're giving to other beings physically, and more about what you're giving to them on an energetic level. It's very, very normal. It's when I used to clean houses for a living, I used to get a sense of contribution out of doing that for a long time. That you know, if a young family came home and their house was clean and tidy and just as they wanted it to be, that they didn't have to come home and start battling, you know, dealing with all that, then I felt good inside, that they're making a nice environment for them to live in. That was the feeling and the contribution that came from that. But eventually, that wasn't enough. There was a sense of, especially when we go back, the same house the very next week, and it was just as bad. I'm not judging anyone because I know what it's like with little kids, and I never had to work full time with little kids, so I can only imagine. But there was some urge, some impulse to bring some lasting change. So probably what you're experiencing here, a lasting contribution, rather than giving someone a product or something that's going to make them feel good for a short while, there's naturally a growing urge to make them feel good permanently. And that's what I'm doing here with this. How can I, instead of teaching a man giving a man a fish, how can I teach him to fish? And that's what's going on here, isn't it? So if you focus on how you can, what gives you greatest joy is sharing this teaching, sharing what you're learning, sharing your breakthroughs, helping other beings break through theirs. In what way can you do that in your life right now? That's, so you might go and do the exact same activities. You might go to the same house, see the same client, but for a totally different reason. Before you were going to sell a product, and now you're going, a product may get sold, but there's a whole interaction between you and this other being that's possible when you're open to it. And that's life-changing, that is. Not that whatever you're selling isn't, but you see where I'm going with this, hopefully, that your sense of contribution is moving, isn't it? How you want to contribute, what you want to do. And maybe the selling of the products is just the vehicle by which that will happen, rather than the means to that contribution now. So usually it happens when our seeing has deepened, that we get this urge to contribute in some way. And it's really only our inner seeing wanting to move into our outer world to help other beings and things like that. I hope that helps. But, you know, if you need more clarity on it, please do drop me a line like this again. And really, really happy to hear from you. Wonderful. I wish more people would send in their first one. It's not so scary, hopefully you can see, and it will be welcomed with open arms. And you could take, I've said it before, but it's worthwhile saying again. I could, if I really wanted to, I could find someone that seems to be more advanced than me and someone that seems less advanced than me, and then compare myself like that and feel either very worthy or very unworthy, either which way I go. And we just, you know, we're not really going to do that here. We're just going to, if you've been in the graduate program longer, you'll seem more awake. Body and mind reflect the truth clearer than somebody who perhaps is just starting this process or is going through the course for the first time or wherever we're starting from. And if you'd have seen me 10 years ago or 5 years ago, you would have said you'd have noticed a marked difference. So I'm so glad that you did send that in, and I would encourage anyone that's wanting to but didn't to send in homework for the first time. And wonderful. Lovely. Okay, so last but not least, hi Helen, and thanks for all your efforts in this awakening process. Our homework has really brought me to a point where I just have to ask, is there really a world at all? Or is it just a pop-up creation as real and substantive as my nighttime dreams? Once I take a stand with this and stop getting involved, then perhaps I can just watch dispassionately, as you said on Sunday. If all the other beings are just projected and without substance, like my own body, then all that is left is my constant thinking to deal with. Is it true that mind is only experienced during thinking, and when there is no thought, then mind disappears? But like the world, if I can do my best to take attention away from thought, then its power over me will be greatly diminished. Trying to let go of all my precious stories about the world and myself is next up. Much love to you and everyone on the GP. Yeah, there is something here, isn't there? But what is it? Am I looking at a street and houses and trees and a room and a laptop and all of that? Is there really a world in the way that we think? Are there really any other beings in the way that we think? When you're really ready for these kind of direct questions, there's something extraordinary happening like that, isn't there? That is it just a pop-up creation that I'm superimposing over what's already here? Am I superimposing from in here? Where does that world exist that you think you're seeing? Does it exist out there? Would a tree call itself a tree? Would a bird call itself a bird if it could talk? Or would it say, I don't know what I am? Would my cat say, I'm really enjoying being a cat, actually? Or would it just say, I am? I don't know what a cat is. It's only us humans that are obsessed with naming things. For some weird reason, why do we do that? It's funny, isn't it? No other species on the entire planet does it, or is capable of it, and therefore they're not disturbed. But if I can separate the world of names and forms and meanings that is actually occurring inside my body mind from what is actually out there, then out there is just a kaleidoscope of shapes made by the shapeless being that you are. And then if you see that you're not really suffering from anything out there, but from what you think it is in here, then it gets very, very simple. I can either take my attention away from those thoughts, as you suggested, and just focus on that which isn't thinking, the noumenon, tuning in as in lesson one. Or I can ask a really powerful question, a question that has the ability to annihilate all ability to suffer. Such a question, you know, what is reality? What is all this? Is there really anything? Are there any phenomena at all? These questions are about as direct as you can get in that, aren't they? You know, these questions have the power to completely bring the mind to silence, because mind can't answer them. Mind can only tell you about the labels of the things it thinks are there and the beings it thinks are there and the being it thinks you are. It's a collection. Mind is a collection of descriptions, descriptive thoughts about things it thinks are there. But if you begin to see that they're not really there, actually, what I'm looking at is the noumenon, even though it looks like a tree. It is insubstantial. Pop-up creation, then everything is experienced in that silence as that silence of the noumenon. So if you take your attention away from it or question it directly, it has the same effect. I'm really, really excited because I've seen you since you came into the graduate program and the course and the graduate program really getting to this point, as you just said. And this is where it gets really simple. Am I going to believe in what I think I'm looking at, or am I going to find out directly what it is? And then the world in my head diminishes in its importance, and I begin to experience the isness of everything. The peace that comes with knowing everything is insubstantial, formless in nature. Whether it looks like a cloud or a concrete block, it is the same thing, nothingness. So if just taking your attention away from the thoughts works for you, then great. That's meditation, tuning into the silence, or whichever way. Or if you feel, and maybe both at some point, some urge to deeply question with some extraordinarily direct question, is there really a world? And something inside might go, ooh, this is a little risky question here. This is a little bit, but you're only coming to see how it already is. And when I did this, I kind of pushed through that fear because I went on the word of all the great beings that had gone before me that said, you'll really like it when you do push through. It'll feel really good. I've never heard anyone say that to see the world isn't real. is a terrible thing, and you'll become despondent and despairing. The world isn't here, isn't a real thing. But when you see what it really is, you fall in love with it. And the highest and simplest place to live your life is where the word self, with a capital S, noumenon, awareness, and world mean the same thing. They mean the same thing to me now. When I say world, I mean self. When I say self, I mean world. They don't have any difference inside me anymore. They are synonyms. And that's what your homework is pointing to, isn't it? That place where world is just a creation of appearance. Something appears to be a house, it doesn't mean it ever is. Something appears to be a human body, it doesn't mean it ever is. Something appears to be a thought, it doesn't mean it ever really is. And the world is a world of appearances, a pop-up creation, a Where's Wally, as we were saying in the other part, a magic eye. The world is a magic eye, three-dimensional magic eye picture. That when you look at it some way, it looks like a world full of things. When you look at it in the non-attention state, you're not paying attention to anything in particular, suddenly the allness, the isness of it comes into focus. None of it is really what it looks like. And that is the best discovery of all, the best discovery. Delightful, joyful, blissful, ecstatic. And you can't help but fall in love with all of it. Because the all has gone. There's just is rather than all, because all relates to all the things I think I'm seeing. And there is just you everywhere. This is you talking to you and reminding you that it's okay to let go of thinking that there is a world. As Ramana said, the world is Brahman. That's the final seeing. The world isn't real, he said, but he also said the world is Brahman. The world that we think is there is not real. So I would absolutely recommend wholeheartedly doing that. Dive right in there. It's okay to be a Buddha in this lifetime, isn't it? To stop seeing what's not there and to start seeing what's always been here. That sounds a bit backwards, but yeah, hopefully you know what I mean. I'm always very excited when someone gets this point. Well, I'm very excited anyway, but it's not a hard place to reach. It just may take us a little while to get beyond the idea that I might have imagined all of this. And we can imagine for a very long time. I'm really, really happy that you're coming out of it. Trying to let go of all my precious stories about the world and myself is next up. Lovely. Thank you for all your intelligent feedback and homework that you sent in. Just a reminder that the deadline for sending in homework, the cutoff point, has changed to Tuesday, 6 p.m. UK time. And it will be read, and depending on the amount of homework that comes in, it will either be uploaded Thursday, Friday, or sometimes even Wednesday, depending on how organized I've been. So thank you all, and I'll see you soon. Much love to you all.